me.
Yeah, there it is. When that robot comes in, you know it's time to come in. Wherever you are, whenever you are, however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELC.
Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or maybe you're running to the grocery store, you just need to pop on a podcast in the car for that 15-minute stretch. Well, guess what? We're going to be here for longer than that. We got 90-plus minutes of gaming goodness. Because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Those fine folks bring the show to you. Their generosity, their support, their awesomeness means we get to keep making these. You can be one of them. And if you do, if you help make sure this show continues, you get some cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a whole bunch of bonus content. Oh, yeah. We got Feeling This, two seasons, the third on the way, with Alex Solman and Christian Spicer getting deep on video games. We got the DLC Book Club audio version. We've got spoiler chats. We've got bonus episodes, and we've got that Wednesday paid DLC program where Lana Bashinsky joins us to talk about what the patrons are talking about. It's good fun. It's great times, and it's available only to patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games, and there are many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who wins my Oscar for best detractor, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian!
It's a salami, though. It's just salami. Yours is an Oscar. It's Oscar Mayer. You just sent me meat in the mail. Thank
my
you.
My baloney has a first name. It's O-S-C-A-R.
I'd like to dedicate this lunch meat to my family. I also want to thank all of the guests we've had on this.
Sorry, got to play you off, buddy. Took too long. Oh, man. We got a big show for you. We got lots to talk about. We got a Xbox Partner Showcase. We have a preview of a game where You might have gotten worried that the show didn't come out at its normal hour. We waited a few hours to hit an embargo because we got Rise of Ronin to talk about a little bit. But ladies and gentlemen, we have an awesome guest for you. To do all of that, you know the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, ooh, I'm so excited because DLC stands for Dompierre Loves to Coordinate. Because you know him from IGN and Windows Central, but now he's social media coordinator for Illphonic. Our friend Miles Dompierre is back with us. Hey, Miles, how are you?
I'm awesome. What is going on, dude? It's been a minute. As you mentioned, a lot's changed for me in my life. Had some big developments for me. So yeah, I'm a social media coordinator over at Illphonic. I'm on the dev side of things now, which is exciting. But was in games media for quite some time. Like you said, worked at Windows Central, IGN. So it's been really cool to start my dev journey and get a sneak peek into what that looks like and compare that to what a lot of people online think that is.
Well, you bring it up. I'll ask, what do you find to be the biggest difference between outside looking in and inside looking out?
So there's a lot of assumptions about how things are done and why things are done. The funniest thing for me is being on the inside is that a lot of people assume everything is easier than it is just from all aspects. One of my least favorite things that I see online now being on the social media side is this phrase that, oh, the marketing for this game sucks or the marketing for this thing sucks. When a lot of people don't even know what marketing encompasses as a whole and then what goes into it. A trailer, for example, we recently did a gameplay trailer for Killer Clowns from Outer Space, the game. And so I got to see that entire process from beginning to end and how many people and how many hours and how much time that took to get just like a minute and 50 second trailer ready for a specific date. So that's been really fun. It's been really cool to see all of these teams come together. And Ilphonic's relatively small in terms of size. So a lot of people are working directly in tandem, which is exciting. So you get a really intimate look at all the departments, which for me is huge. So it's been really cool. It's been really exciting.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. It's one of those things when, you know, we lament about leaks ruining things, you don't really realize how many people's jobs just got smushed under the foot of some leaker. You know, it's like people have been working for months, nay years, to bring you this exciting thing. And then somebody's just like, I'll leak it. You know?
Yeah. And even brutal. Media side, I know that is like a thing that people look to. They want the info as soon as possible from whoever's going to give it to them. So I understand. I'm not going to fault anyone for being excited about that sort of info. But on the creative side of things, it's a humongous bummer to have those moments kind of pulled out from underneath you. So totally. I've talked to a lot of people in the industry about leaks and what they do to everyone who's been going through all these hoops and changing the way that they pass information and share information and all these security protocols that impact their day to day. And then just to have that kind of like leaked with no ceremony. It's a bit of a bummer, but
yeah. Well, we're glad you're still able to join us, even though you've crossed over, and we got a lot to get into. So let's start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send comments, questions, suggestions, anything you'd like us to know. We love getting email from you at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. But that's not the only way. It's a great way, not the only way, to get a hold of us, to talk amongst yourself, to be part of the community, because we have a Discord as well. It's 5x5 DLC on Discord. Great community of folks talking about games and organizing cool stuff. It's great. DLC feedback, or excuse me, DLC. I'll try that a third time. 5x5 DLC on Discord. All right, Miles, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Me, in terms of just fun game-centric news, I'm going to go with the Xbox partner preview.
Yeah, we had a pretty cool showcase this week. Lasted, I think, a little over a half an hour, and it was back-to-back trailers for games. One of the oddest voiceover choices I've heard. I don't know if you guys noted that, but it would be like this bombastic trailer, and then a guy would come on and be like, well, that's Unknown 9 Awakening. You'll be able to play that. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting counter choice. But other than that, I thought it was a pretty cool presentation. And we got a bunch of new trailers, some dates on stuff, or some windows, no pun intended, on game releases that we knew about, some stuff we didn't know about. So Miles, of the Xbox partner preview stuff, what was your biggest takeaway? What game or games were you most excited to see?
Well, before we dive into that, one funny note on the VO. Have either of you played El Paso Elsewhere? That's the guy. That is the El Paso
Elsewhere. That makes more
Elsewhere.
Sense now.
So the second that VO kicked in, I was like, oh, wait a second.
That's funny.
And then, yeah, sure enough, after the showcase, they confirmed. I was like, oh, man. Because, yeah, like
you
said.
Did you catch that, Christian?
It's a specific voice, a very specific voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. I was watching it on my phone in between, you know, life things, and I did not clock that. But that does make a lot of sense. And I think also then fits with the idea of bombastic trailer and then this voice that comes in and
I wish they made a bigger deal about that, because it just felt weird to me because I didn't put it together. Even though I'd played that game, I didn't even catch that. And now it feels like a choice. It feels like a fun.
Yes. The fun creative choice. Yeah. Yes. So that was cool.
Anti-hero. Thank you for clarifying that. But back to my question, what did you like from the preview?
I've been very enamored by Kunitsugami, Path of the Goddess, which when that was first revealed, instantly sucked in by its art style. Very vivid colors. It's a new IP from Capcom that ties back to, or kind of is a throwback to what feels like Okami, in the sense of that really saturated traditional Japanese art style. We have the yokai, these demons coming out of portals. You have some, in the new gameplay showcase, we saw that it's a strategy game that has almost Pikmin-inspired elements to it. So you have these day and night cycles where you need to rescue villagers and then train and prepare them for to battle the demons at night. And so it's not only is it a cool new IP from Capcom, but it's a very interesting gameplay loop. It's not just another action RPG, which is kind of what I assumed when they first revealed it, that it was just going to be a hack and slash style RPG. But to know that it is a strategy hack and slash RPG has me really, really interested to see how that feels when we get our hands on it. And it's supposed to drop sometime in 2024, no hard release date, but sometime this year. So that to me is still kind of one of my most anticipated games of 2024.
Yes, I had the same reaction you did. I think we saw this, I can't remember, not too long ago, we saw this at another presentation like this, Kunitsugami, Path of the Goddess, which eventually I'll be able to roll off the tongue.
Oh, yeah.
But, but yeah, it kind of looked like another Souls-like kind of, you know, very intense precision action hack and slash third-person game. And what they showed this time really piqued my interest much more. I also think that there was something about the perspective that felt unique, like where the camera is positioned. It's kind of lower than you get most games like that. Or I don't know. There was something about it that seemed, you know, certainly the art direction, as you pointed out, the vibrant colors, just this wild, almost garish mix mash of wild color and pageantry. There's masks and banners and stuff, and there's like an extended dance sequence that was shown in the trailer. So it certainly has an identity that I think is really eye-catching and unique. But I also kind of felt like there was something about the pure presentation of where the camera sits that felt like it had a little hint of originality as well.
Yeah, it was this fusion of, it wasn't traditional third person over the shoulder. And it wasn't isometric, but it felt like it existed in this plane between those two things to cater to that those strategy elements. Because if you have to manage different groups and not only your own character, it makes sense to kind of pull things back and give you more of a view. So yeah, it to me, it felt almost storybook-esque, the way you were looking at this widescreen image from a perspective that was pulled back. So I thought that really kind of emphasized that art style even further.
Yeah. Christian, any thoughts about Kunitsugami, Path of the Goddess?
My favorite part is how it represents, I think, a really good look at modern or current Capcom, where we're getting a lot of remakes, excellent remakes, but you know they're going back and doing all these Resident Evils or continuing franchises like Street Fighter, and I think doing excellent versions of them. But at the same time, we get very... it feels like pretty risky games, risky, still getting a good budget, still doing something new and quirky or adding a genre to an established genre. And I think it's exciting to see Capcom continuing to do that because not a lot of publishers necessarily are. And I think right now they have a really good mix of established franchises folks really want to see, remakes, and then also constantly pushing things forward a little bit. And this looks to be that kind of game. So I hope it does catch on with folks and we're able to see them continue this trend of doing something, you know, a little silly or a little different and still giving it budget and also having it be part of these partner preview events, right? Where like clearly it was given a spotlight and time to shine, which is really cool to see.
And this was the sort of the final game shown. So I believe, you know, that tends to be a pretty prominent placement for things that will close out a presentation like this. Christian, did you have a game to pluck out as one of the ones that stuck out to you?
I mean, my newsletter, I did one on Friday about what my ideal remake is or what an ideal remake is. I've just been smitten by Final Fantasy. And I think Rebirth is so fascinating. And speaking of a company, you know, innovating while also playing it safe and doing a remake, Final Fantasy 16 was a big part of last year for me, and now Remake and now Rebirth. And so I'm excited to see Final Fantasy 14 coming out and also getting on Xbox and getting this moment. Final Fantasy 14 existed before Final Fantasy got its hooks back into me again. and it also wasn't good, you know, when it started. And now it's incredible. And I'm super curious, you know, almost from a outside looking in perspective of, will Final Fantasy 14 on Xbox come in and be able to pull a huge chunk of players in immediately, because it is this fully baked, pretty awesome experience now that it wasn't for a lot of folks when they first started. And I'm really curious to see if, you know, Microsoft can make some waves there. Cause we also learned, not one of our stories this week, I think it was this week, maybe it was last week, we had kind of reporting of, yeah, Final Fantasy VII, the remakes are going to be PlayStation exclusives. But we're also seeing Microsoft continuing to try to get some of those Japanese games over. And so I think for me, this announcement is exciting because I'm curious to see how it does, because people love Final Fantasy XIV. It hasn't slowed down, right? It's still super popular. So I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, you tend not to be a big MMO guy, but I think it's cool that you're excited about this one.
Well, because everybody loves the story. You know, a lot of times MMOs, I get brought in by a story and then I spend 8 hours getting clay pots. I lose the story, but people.
I got bad news for you. That's not absent from. 14,
I know, but everybody loves the story. So I'm wondering if this will. Because before it was always like, well, I don't want to get it. It's like, no. But now they have the expansion. So now you can get into it. And I kind of like this idea of starting it anew with other people coming in. There's like another zeitgeist moment, right? It's like they've re-released the original trilogy in theaters and you get to be part of it. So
it's always awesome when you have those moments when something that's established like Final Fantasy 14 that's been around for a very long time. You touched on its rocky launch. A lot of people have forgotten or didn't even realize that when Final Fantasy 14 was first released, it was pulled. It was shut down and they had to relaunch Final Fantasy 14. So they spent a lot of time honing it in and adding expansions, and there's all this content. So to be a fresh player diving into this after years and years and years of support, it's really exciting. And like you said, it shows that Microsoft is committed to partnering with Japanese developers. We had the CEO of Square Enix come out on stage to announce that finally, after years of people like Phil Spencer saying, oh yeah, we'd love it. Yeah, we'd love to have Final Fantasy 14 on Xbox, that they're actually doing it. And then to have the actual date in the show was really exciting. And last week, I believe in the US at least, Final Fantasy 14, the open beta, was the number one free game on Xbox, the number one played. So trumping even Fortnite. So it shows that there is still a demand and a desire from this community to play this game. And so that was really cool to see. And it makes me excited for that launch to see if this is just another boon to a very, very successful ongoing MMO.
And that open beta must have gone well, because the release date is not far off. We have just over 2 weeks, I think. March 21st is when it will hit Xbox. And the Series X version is going to be able to play it at 4K resolution. Pretty cool for Series X owners. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I did not see any mention of this being on Game Pass, which I think would have been the ultimate coup.
You get the Starter Edition if you're a Game Pass Ultimate subscriber. Don't know what that is, if it's like a month free or like a level free. It's, you get something with Game Pass.
What? Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. You can try it out at least. But yeah, huge shot in the arm for Xbox on the Final Fantasy front, because this is an MMO that is still going strong. People love it, and it's going to be in active development for years to come. You know, this is a game that is in its prime. So it's pretty cool to see it coming out on a console like that. And I'm sure it'll get a huge influx of players, especially in the wake of, as you mentioned, Christian, all the Final Fantasies that are
all the Final Fantasy is, I mean, it never went away, but it is back, right? Yeah, like, I think it's as big now as it's ever been.
Yeah. I thought there was a number of really cool things in the partner preview. The one that stuck out, I think, more than any other for me is the Altars, which I was intrigued by when we first heard about it. This is 11-bit Studios sci-fi game where it looks like it's part third-person action-adventure exploration game, part space management sim, you know, and where you're going to have to compile a crew of yourself over and over, various versions of yourself. You're cloning yourself. It's not even cloning. It's a really clever notion, this sci-fi concept of you get to pluck versions of yourself from the multiverse that made different choices in your life, you know, you being the main character. So there's a very, you know, specific main character in this story. And, you know, these other versions of what if you had studied harder in school? Maybe you're a rocket scientist now, so you've got that skill set. Or maybe you, you know, were committed to your marriage better and you have a different kind of skill set. Maybe you did all these different choice paths not taken, the sliding doors of video games. And then these characters actually show up in your world and you have to deal with them bumping into each other. So it's kind of part sliding doors, part multiplicity. If anybody remembers that Michael Keaton movie, I love that movie, but it just looks like such a clever idea. And then what they showed this time around, I think the only thing we had seen up to this point was a pre-rendered, you know, trailer, an idea trailer. And I think we got some actual gameplay this time, and boy, does it look pretty. Really gorgeous alien world vistas, and the mix of you're in this kind of this giant wheel that moves around the surface of this planet, and you've got people in different pods inside the wheel that have to interact with each other. So you're kind of dealing with this top down, almost The Sims-esque, you know, isometric view of the inner workings of their daily lives. And then it cuts to what it looks like a completely different game, almost, of this, almost like I was reminded of Death Stranding. It's like Death Stranding meets The Sims.
Kind of. Can I tell you something?
Fascinating to me.
The version of you, Jeff, who doesn't skip leg day, already saw that trailer a couple weeks ago. They really liked it. And the one of you that was really good at playing pickleball has already played the game. So I just wanted to let you know there are other yous out there that, yeah. Mm-hmm. The pickleball Jeff, though, is a jerk. Like he,
yeah.
You don't want to meet that, pickleball Jeff. That's super tracks. Competitive.
That yeah. tracks. I think it's a really fun notion, and it looks like they've really kind of leaned into the concept. I don't know if I'm going to love the mechanics of the game. I still have big question marks around how much of The Simsy it's going to be, because I played The Sims a fair amount in '03 or whatever it was, you know, but you know, that type of gameplay I'm not always drawn to. I do like some fiddly, you know, management stuff, but I'm curious if it's going to be able to meld and mesh those two sides. But it kind of reminds me almost of Marvel's Rising Suns, where it was like, hey, we're going to do this like action-y game, you know, turn-based action card game, but also you're going to wander around this place and do these kind of, you know, relationship sim stuff. I love that game. So I don't know. This the Alters looks like it could be really different and interesting, and I'm intrigued.
Yeah, the Alters had a really, like you described, the trailer took you on a ride. It starts off, like you said, it feels like Death Stranding. That's the first game that came to mind when I saw this person walking around with a backpack through space, and there's all these expansive environments. And then, like you said, it cuts to Fallout Shelter, and there's all these cubicles.
Yeah, right.
And you're trying to manage all these different resources, and you're going back and asking yourself, you know, what if I made this decision? And then what if I took that person and then put them to work in my sweatshop while I went out into the world and harvested more resources? So it's, I'm really interested to see how it feels, because that's going to be the biggest thing for me.
Yeah.
Are both elements fun?
Right.
The exploration coming together with the sim management, is that fun? There's been a lot of examples recently that have shown that you can have really deep sim elements and engaging gameplay. And I think that's exactly what they're trying to do with this. The concept itself is really exciting and really interesting. And I'll be really excited to get my hands on it and see how it feels.
I'm hoping the writing shines. They showed a number of situations where you're having these dialogue between different versions of that dude. And it feels like that is ripe for comedic potential. You know, it's like there's a lot of opportunity to have tons of fun with this. of the same guy arguing. I mean, like Multiplicity, right? The same dude arguing with him, different versions of himself. And I hope they're not too precious with it. I hope they really can have some fun and be goofy, and because I think that would be the joy of the concept,
and not just be the regret simulator. You reflecting right. on your entire life and like, God, wow, where did it go wrong, man?
Yeah, yeah.
And these two genres feel like my life, though. Like inside my house, I am just a management sim. My house is super organized. But I leave the front door. If I see you, I'm kicking your butt. Like I am just sure. beating the crap out of you. Like I am an action star on the streets and an organizer in the house in the is what I am. It's
I didn't see any action. I don't know if that's accurate. I really wonder if there is action. There might be, but the exploration stuff looked cool. There's this resource they talked about that it's all glow. And the visuals, I should say. I thought were really striking, really cool looking game. Anyway, lots of other good stuff. Any other ones that stuck out to you, Miles?
I'll just say the Chucky Roblox thing made me feel incredibly old. Cause when it first started, I was so confused. We saw these sweeping shots of the street and the graphics are very, you know, for lack of a better word, primitive, very basic.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to Chucky. Like a 3D rendered Chucky that looks good. I'm like, are they making a Chucky game, a standalone Chucky game? And then it cuts to a very successful, very popular game that already exists within Roblox. So it's like Roblox is the platform. There's this horror game akin to Dead by Daylight within Roblox. And Chucky is coming to this game within Roblox. And seeing that trailer, I was like, oh, man, like I know horror really well, but seeing that made me feel very out of touch.
Yeah, and I guess it's only going to be there for a limited time. You can play Chucky just for a short time. We don't do Roblox in my house, so I'm a little out of that loop. But it does look kind of cool. Christian, I suspect you might be all over Tales of Kinzera Zao.
I might be.
Mayhaps.
Perhaps. It. So I miss E3 is the long and short of it. Like I can't keep up with all these, Jeff. When does it come out? What is it? Which showcase was it? I find myself sitting here wondering, like, that was really cool. Which one was that? When was it? When is it coming out? What is it part of? Is it the big thing? And so I love that more games are getting spotlights, but I truly feel like I have a hard time retaining any of them outside of that day. You know, and it's like then we come down here and it's like, oh yeah, that did happen, this is happening, that is happening, but it's a lot and I can't keep them straight, to be perfectly honest. Well, that's
it's a it's, you know, it's a Metroidvania 2D side scrolling
it looks great but I don't know.
All right, okay.
You're going to start having just fair enough. Get a document open when you're watching these, take some notes, throw a screenshot in there. So when somebody throws a string of words together, you say, what and then, was that?
Then later I get a release date and I'm like, oh, it's that one. You know, I plug it in and move on.
Come up with your own personal code names, you know?
I thought Frostpunk 2 looked really, really, really good. I mean, that it's such a dark, depressing game. I really enjoyed the first one, but my goodness, is it you know, as you said, a sadness simulator or a regret simulator. But I think we've gotten to this level of sophistication with these kinds of, I don't know what we call them now, God games, 4X games, you know, Civ type, where you're managing an entire city. And I'm old enough to remember when, you know, you had tiles and everything was, it was cool that it was being able to connect it by roads or electrical grids or whatever the game was using. But Frostpunk 2 looks so seamless. Like everything, it looks like this living, breathing organism that you have somehow cobbled together and made from bits and pieces, but the bits and pieces don't look like bits and pieces. It's the visual representation of Frostpunk at this point with the sequel is just so next level, and I am enamored by it. It has so much style. Again, you know, you're you might have to eat people to survive because it's so cold and you don't have any energy. But it'll look good while you're doing it.
And come July, you're going to want that sweet release into the cold anyway. You know, it's going to be so hot where we are that we can wish for that blissful death.
It is fun. It is fun that it seems like they've got that counter programming. They're like, Frostpunk in July. Here it comes.
Yeah.
The summer's coldest hit?
The Coors Light train's coming to town. Frostpunk 2.
Refreshing and sad.
And sad.
Unknown 9 Awakening, I think, has potential. It really feels like it's on the line between, you know, is it one of the numerous third-person action games that have come and gone and failed spectacularly in the last few years? Or is it a really cool new IP that's going to spawn sequels? What do you think, Miles? Unknown 9 Awakening.
I meant to look it up, but is that one of the leads from the Witcher series? Who was the lead in this?
Her face looked incredibly
familiar, but
it's possible.
I'm a sucker for third person action games with RPG elements, as a lot of us are. But yeah, it's become a very tough market. It's become a market packed with incredible games. So even a good game nowadays, it's hard to get people to pay attention to it.
Yeah.
So that one I was interested in. It's got the idea of being able to, from what I could gather, freeze moments of the battle and warp between people in the battle and do cool magic. Looked like a lot of fun. But again, it's especially in that genre, it's going to be whether or not it feels fun to do and whether or not it's going to be worth the ride. Because I think a problem these games have too often is they try to be 30 hours plus. Like that's just I have to be 30 hours just for the sake of being 30 hours, and 15 of those hours you wish you didn't do. But it looked like a great concept for sure.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. It looked like there was like pulling the soul out of somebody before you attack them. You know, kind of like almost that moment from the Doctor Strange movies where he's kicked and his soul stays in one place, but his body moves. That it was a neat effect that seemed to be part of your repertoire as the main character. But you're right. There's also this element of what almost looked like turn-based or sort of pseudo turn-based of freezing time. And then each individual member of the team can do something cool. Not exactly sure how that's going to work, but I was intrigued.
Left me with some interesting questions about how that's going to play out. Cause that was the most interesting concept when she took over. I think it was an archer during the fight. You see her doing her cool magic and then all of a sudden you are the archer. It felt like, I'm like, oh, okay. I like that idea. Threads of Fate is a game that nobody's really heard of, but that was one of my favorite mechanics of that is being able to play as or take control of anybody, any creature in that game you could control. And I always loved that concept and haven't seen a lot of games really lean into that. So that would be a fun twist, fun wrinkle.
And I think it's I have not heard of it, but I think it's like an IP, like an already established IP, right? I think this idea of Unknown 9 is a thing that exists that I am not aware of. Because when I first heard it, I was naming games is hard. Unknown 9 Awakening feels like a lot of words that don't necessarily tell me what it is. And so I was looking it up, and I think there's already established media about this game, but I thought it looked beautiful. The same way that Plague Tale is just a stunning game, you know, and you're kind of moving through those environments. So I was surprised. I believe it is Unknown 9 is a thing already, but something that it was a blind spot to me.
Yeah, I think they were talking about this being the beginning of a multimedia. It's going to be books, and there's going to be this Unknown 9 universe is going to be a comic book. So we've got video game, podcasts, comics, and novels. But I don't think they existed before this. I think this was one of those.
This is the
beginning.
We're gonna.
Are you gonna make me do homework though? Am I gonna have to do homework to play this game? Is that what the expectation is?
There was a few years a while back now where that was like the whole thing. Everybody was like, "Oh, it's gonna be transmedia. It's gonna be
Dante's Inferno has a graphic novel of this and that. Yeah. The Dead Space movie launches alongside the game. And
Everything was going to be released as it's also going to be a TV show, and there's going to be none of that ever seemed to really work very well. So I'm a little weary of it, but I thought that the game's trailer looked pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Any excitement for Sinking City 2?
I'm not aware of Sinking City 1. I don't recall that game. Maybe you can fill me in on what Sinking City is.
So it's a really exciting saga. Frogware is the developer, had an issue with their publisher. So they've done a lot of the Sherlock Holmes games recently.
Right.
And they did this game called Sinking City, which was a H.P. Lovecraft detective game. So you were in the city. And there was a lot of Lovecraftian beasts and really vivid visuals. And it was, they were an independent developer. And it had some rough edges, but it was still a great concept and great execution. And then there was this saga where they came out and basically said, stop buying this game. Our publisher is giving us $0 for the version that exists in these stores. Stop buying this game. And it was a very public thing where they were calling out their publisher. And then there was this lengthy period of time where they had to fight to get the rights back. And they released a secondary version of the game. So as far as I can tell, if you're on Xbox or PlayStation, there's like the Xbox One and the PS4 versions are the old publisher, but the updated Series X and S and PS5 versions are Frogwares, essentially. So there's this weird conflict that exists. So a lot of people were unsure of what that would mean for this property. And so it was really exciting to see Frogwares announce a sequel to this, because a lot of people thought it was just going to be in some sort of licensing purgatory because of the ownership conflict with the publisher. So I was excited just because of that saga to see a sequel announced for this game.
That is cool. It's nice to see that happened. I did not know of the first game. Somehow that missed my radar, but it does look pretty interesting. I'm also intrigued by Sleight of Hand, which it looks like this kind of cool mythology, magic using witch who can throw these cards down. It described itself as a stealth game. Christian, any reaction to Sleight of Hand?
I mean, they had you with cards, right? Yeah. Like, that's all it
I don't
takes.
Know if there's cards in the game or if it's just
just the tarot card reader. Idea of it. I think it seems like a very cool premise. I feel like it's early, and so I'm trying to wait and see with some of these games and see what happens. But I like what I did think was exciting is that there was a lot of IP I wasn't aware of, whether Unknown 9 exists or this is the kickoff of it. And Sleight of Hand, I think it is fun to see again at a showcase that there are too many of, but at a showcase seeing this type of event where it's new IPs, different style of gameplays. It wasn't all scary hospital, scary space station, right, all brown or whatever. And so I think Sleight of Hand looks great. Apparently every video game looks amazing and it's super easy to do. What's the problem?
Yeah. Just to round out the partner showcase for folks, Creatures of Ava, which looks kind of like a lovely, almost gave me Viva Pinata vibes with its kind of look and feel, although you are a human that's walking around collecting creatures. Looks very, colorful and lovely, neat art style. Rihanna Pratchett was name dropped at the beginning as co-creator. There was also the first Berserker got more gameplay footage, which I think is going to be appealing to Souls-like players. I think the art style on that one, again, is really, really cool. It's got this very hand-drawn, sketched, kind of inky-looking, cool art style. We got word that the first three Stalker games are getting remastered onto modern consoles, which is pretty cool. And as somebody that took my kid to Monster Jam in real life, if Monster Jam Showdown is on Game Pass, I might play it. I'll just say that.
I'll go that far. I will go that far.
Monster Jam. It's got the actual monster trucks that I saw at Monster Jam. So that's cool. Sounds like you guys were not as impressed with this partner preview as I was. I thought it was pretty solid.
I thought it was good. I thought my biggest compliment for this is it showed a lot of things that weren't for me specifically. Because, okay. You know, we all want the showcase that panders to us exclusively. Yeah. I know when that happens that there's a bunch of people who are disappointed. And I thought this is one of the most diverse conferences they've had in terms of there's games for kids, there's games for adults, there's games for sim fans, there's games for legacy fans with the Stalker collection. So I thought they did a really good job having a great spread. And it also showed a lot of new games, which was really cool to see. A lot of games we had not seen before, whether it be gameplay or new reveals. There were a lot of new moments. So overall, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good show.
Christian, not so much.
I think it was a perfectly fine showcase. It happened during a random week during the port of the year. They're a dime a dozen. It's not all bad. Right. It's not good. It was another one. We had it. It looked good. Right. I don't think it dated.
The jaded gamer over here.
No, I just don't think I don't think it was the best. I don't think it was the We also didn't spend this much time on Nintendo's partner direct that they had. I don't know. When was it? Last week. You know,
let's just do one a week.
No, we did
one
not.
A week until the end of time.
All right.
Look, I'm saying is there are too many games. So I am glad that one company is doing what we should do in getting rid of those games. All I want is big corporate media owned companies to come in and get rid of games, not all give them back to their publishers.
You can't transition into the next story because we need to take a break for sponsor. So we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsor. This episode of DLC is brought to you by BetterHelp. Christian, what would you do if you had an extra hour in your day? The first thing that comes to mind that you would do with an extra hour in your day.
Panic about the monkey paw deal that I made to give me this extra hour. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop and I'm overanalyzing what's happening and I'm debating what I should be doing. And then the hour's gone, Jeff. That's easy.
Well, that doesn't sound like a good use of your hour. I feel like a lot of people are in the same boat, even though we all wish we had more time. You think, oh my gosh, all I need is more time. And then when you squeeze out some more time, you don't know what to do with it. You don't know how to use it. You don't know how to maximize what you have because you don't know what you want. Well, I'm here to tell you. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. I've certainly done some work on myself over the years and tried to isolate the things that I want because sometimes that's not even the easiest question to answer. What do you want? What do you want, Christian? What do you want?
Why are you putting this pressure on me right now?
This is how I answer the phone anytime he calls me. What do you want, Christian?
That's an inside look at the truth, ladies and gentlemen. That is very accurate.
Well, therapy can help. And if you've been thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire, and then you can get matched with a licensed therapist. You can always switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, which is super convenient and means that you're always going to feel comfortable. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DLC today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DLC. All right. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
The Switch emulator. No, I'm just kidding. Set up a tease for something that I'm not going to talk about. Warner Brothers continues to Warner Brothers, I think, is the short version of the story. I love Batgirl. I was very excited for a Batgirl movie. My favorite comic book character probably of all time. I thought Wile E. Coyote versus Acme seemed like a really cool, awesome movie. Would have loved to have watched that. I also like old seasons of John Oliver. That might be Max. That might be somebody else. This story is that Adult Swim Games is coming under the Warner Brothers axe of getting rid of things because having things costs more than getting rid of them, apparently. And so I think all of the Adult Swim games, Headlander, Loved that game. It was so good. So cool and so vibrant and an awesome art style and a really cool creative gameplay, among many others. They're all just going away because Warner Brothers says bye-bye. Some of these studios reached out trying to get the games back. I'm sure there was some financial Excel pivot table, you know, that outlined how much it would be to what can happen to us tax purposes if we give this game to somebody else, or what it means if we give up this property. And so none of the developers as of right now are getting them back, and they're all just going away. They're just gone.
Yeah, it's weird. It's not just they're removed from sale. It's even if they're in your library, in some cases, you won't be able to play them anymore, which is, I feel, not great. That's not
doesn't
great.
Feel good. Does no. not feel good.
In order for us to save money, you have to not be able to play the thing you already purchased.
What? And they're like, but I thought you said there were too many games. We're the good guy here. We're going into your house and taking your games away.
You're
Come
complaining
on.
About your backlogs yeah. constantly. We have the yeah. metrics on social media that tell us how many of you are complaining about your backlogs. Here's yeah. the solution.
We did it. You're welcome.
I don't see the problem.
So they're delisting games. It will take at least 18 games offline. Some of the developers are trying to figure out ways to mitigate the harm. There is Fireface Corp, for example, who made a game called Small Radio's Big Televisions, which is a adventure puzzler that was on PlayStation and PC. They're saying, we have 60 days. We're going to put the game out for free on our website. You can download it now, because if you own it, it won't work anymore after 60 days. Another indie developer, Team 2-Bit, they have a beat-em-up called Fist Puncher. They requested from WB to let them take ownership of the game and see it forward. WB said, no, sorry, we have lack of resources available for that. To which they responded, the transfer process literally takes a minute to initiate. But their rep claimed they have simply made the universal decision not to transfer the games to the original creators. Pretty crazy. Pretty crazy that this is happening. It underscores a thing we've talked about many, many times here on the show. You don't really own anything, even if you think you own it. So, you know, in one sense, it kind of defangs a lot of the protest about, you know, streaming services, because it's like, this isn't a streaming service problem, right? It's like, oh, if we're getting something on a streaming service, they can just take it off. I'd rather buy it and own it. Well, guess what? It still happens if you buy it and own it. So this is kind of bonkers. And it's so weird. We live in a world where this makes more financial sense than just continuing to let you purchase things or own things. Christian did not mention that along with Adult Swim Games, our friends over at Rooster Teeth have been shut down or are in the process of shutting its doors. Rooster Teeth was acquired. They're one of the longest running, you know, Red versus Blue. Like that's like the
21 OG. Years, 21 years,
the OG machinima. You know, we don't even use the word machinima anymore, which is how, you know, ubiquitous it is. The idea of, oh, I could take a video game graphics and make a cartoon out of it. We needed a name for in the early aughts because of Red versus Blue, and now it's just like, oh, the Unreal Engine is used to animate things. What we don't need machinima. That's not a word we need anymore. And now Red versus Blue, the parent company, the podcast network,
which is also Warner Brothers, just to be like, that's why they're kind of linked as one story. These were two separate axes being dropped.
Yes.
Maybe from
Warner Brothers
different-
acquired Rooster Teeth in, I don't know how long ago, a while back. And
like when they bought AT&T or something, like they were, Rooster Teeth was owned by somebody else. And then Warner Brothers bought that somebody else or something, you know, like the way us little people get moved around in the bond of the pond of larger corporate corporations.
It's a bummer.
I just don't know how, and I know Warner Brothers Games, I guess, isn't really doing this right now, but this feels like, you know, sometimes we say this, a game was only announced as a recruiting calling card. Like, we're making an Indiana Jones game and we're announcing it 3 years in advance because we want you to come work for our studio, dear game dev. This type of action of just doing this delisting and killing of all these Adult Swim games, if you're a developer looking to work with a publisher, I don't think WB, or if you're a filmmaker and looking to make a movie, I don't know. I'm on the outside looking in, but WB, they own some of my favorite properties and they've made some of my very favorite games and movies and TV shows over the years. But I would have a hard time being excited that they're picking up my game right now. I don't know.
It is overtly hostile to creators. As you said, both in the video game space and the movie TV space, it is a baffling strategy. If you're in the business of enticing top tier creators to make stuff under your label, to do something that is that is undeniably hostile to creators, it is very, very strange. But here we are. This is the world we live in.
And there doesn't appear to be any rhyme or reason to it outside of we don't feel like paying what we all know is not a lot to maintain the servers that are housing these games. And so, like you said, it feels incredibly hostile. It feels arbitrary. And WB has been on this weird saga that just showcases a lot of what's wrong when it comes to our current tax situation. Where they are blatantly telling you, we have made this, we paid to make this, we're not going to release it. We're going to take the tax hit. You are going to pay for this movie that you will never, ever be able to see. And there is nothing you can do about it. We can do this over and over and over again, and there is nothing you can do about it or anyone else can do about it. And we've seen some people within Congress say, look at I think it was the Coyote versus Acme situation and say, wait a second, that's what they're doing. They're literally just going to can this movie that was done and paid for and just get the tax write off. And I feel like maybe that shouldn't be something we can do. You know, I don't have all the insights. I don't have any sort of high level business acumen, but I feel like that's something that we shouldn't be allowed to do. It's rewarded. This idea that you can be hostile towards creators is being actively rewarded through tax dollars. And to me, again, just as a average schmuck on the streets, it seems insane.
The system is broken. If the wisest financial decision is to behave in this way, the system's broken.
And just a bummer to folks who put so much of their life into something. And same with these game creators, you know, you have a game that lives on in some Moby Games database that you made this game, but there's no way to, and it's not that this was a game that came out on the Atari 2600 and time has moved on and you can't replay these games. These are like current active games.
Another example, Studio Bean made a game called Sound Dodger Plus, a bullet hell hybrid game that's on Steam. Developer was like, hey, can we get back the rights so we can do it? And they're like, well, hey, we're not going to transfer anything over to you, but you're welcome to republish Sound Dodger Plus with somebody else. If you do, you need to go in and edit the credits of the game, remove any reference to WB or Adult Swim games. Also, you're not allowed to have the game on any wish lists, reviews, community guides, forum discussions. You have to pretend this game never existed before if you're going to republish it. You can't rely on anything, any accumulated goodwill you've garnered for your game. It's just weird and depressing. Anyway, my story of the week is, I guess I'll do something a little more positive. It was Mario Day. Hey, nothing bad can happen on Mario Day. Mario Day. Why is it Mario Day, March 10th? Because Mar 10 looks like Mar EO. So it's
that's
Mario
cute.
Day.
That's cute.
we can't not have a gimmick. We're not going to let that just sit there and not do something with it.
Which we should announce that August 17th, people might not know this, but that is actually DLC day, because the A kind of looks like a D, and the one, and then the seven, like
you
the
didn't
seven
want to go
upside
with
down.
December. December 5100th, because the L and the C in Roman numerals are...
It's actually April 12th, because D is the fourth letter, and then L is the 12th letter, and then
we
C
should
is
workshop
the...
this before we went to...
We went no. The shirts are made. It's either the first day I said, the December DLC date you day. Said, or...
The great thing about DLC day, it's whatever day you want it to be. Anyway, Mario Day, March 10th. We all celebrated in our own way. Nintendo celebrated. They finally mentioned Paper Mario 1000 Year Door remake and Luigi's Mansion 2 HD are coming out. They're coming out May 23rd and June 27th, respectively. So we got Mario games coming to the Switch in May and June. That's pretty cool. They are, you know, games you've already been able to play, but that's okay. They look cool. Also, we got news that surprised no one, that the Super Mario Brothers movie is getting a sequel, because they didn't use up all the references in the first movie. We can make another one of those.
Because they didn't partner with WB, so they can actually release another movie.
Pratt's available. Let's get him in here.
I mean,
wait, I thought he was double booked. He's Garfield.
Yeah. Well, they're just gonna record it all on the same day. It'll be a really odd. He's like, it's me, loving lasagna and hating Mondays.
I mean, I do love that. I really enjoy that movie. I think it's beautiful. I think I mentioned, I think we talked about it on Filmcast, Jeff. I think that movie is frame for frame. Every frame's a poster. It is just stunning. Mm-hmm. The fact that it's like this announcement, though, it's like, remember that movie that made billions? We're going back, baby. It's like,
remember
the
highest grossing movie of 2023? You're going to be shocked to hear that we're dipping back into that well again.
Yeah, this is Miyamoto, and I do enjoy the money we made off the first Mario Brothers movie.
It may have been the number two. Barbie may have eclipsed it, but for a long time, it was the number one highest grossing movie of the year.
They did frame it, though, as... Oh gosh, what was the exact quote? It was like, we're going back to the world of Mario Brothers. You know, it's like something that, like, in the first movie, spoiler, you know, there was Donkey Kong and Kong Land, and they were playing on that IP. But I do wonder if they're going to take it even broader now, because, you know, you
Mario
made a joke.
Tennis, it's going to be the sports version. He's going to be Mario Strikers and tennis.
Well, I'm wondering, like, are we going to get Splatoon? Are we going to, like, there's still Pikmin, you know, like, how big of a world of Mario does that film franchise?
I don't know. I feel like those are they got to save those for their own movies. You know, waste the Pikmin movie.
Let's get a Luigi's Mansion movie going. That's what I want to see.
Well, he kind of goes.
We had that a little bit in the first one.
Exactly. There's a taste. A taste of what could have been.
Yeah. Anyway, so you know, Mario Day. Also, there's some Mario Game Boy games are coming to Switch Online. Dr. Mario, Mario Golf will be coming to Switch Online. Not the most, you know, megaton Mario Day announcements we've ever had. I will tell you what my favorite Mario Day announcement was, which is not here in the dock, but maybe you guys heard as well. I was very tickled, and my son even more so than I. Some new Mario Lego sets were announced on Mario Day.
Oh, Mario Kart, specifically.
A big tease for Mario Kart. But they said 2025 for Mario Kart, which is very, very, very depressing. But it does seem like there's going to be a major Mario Kart set. But the 2024 sets that are coming out in August, there's a Bowser train, which looks really cool. Some other stuff. I like the Mario Lego sets.
I found it
really
interesting
good.
That a lot of this stuff, though, we still don't know what Nintendo's fall is. For a while, it was the Switch 2, you know, was the rumor. But this stuff, too, is all – it's front-loaded. This stuff is now, May, June. I mean, very curious what
Metroid
Nintendo's
Prime?
Fall will be.
Could it be?
Could it be the fabled be? Metroid Prime 4?
I doubt it, but maybe. Anyway, that was Mario Day. And that – it was our stories of the week. Let's get into the games that we have been playing, because there's some fun ones to chat about. with the playlist.
Ooh, what you playing this week? You tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? You tell us on the playlist.
Miles Dompierre, you are a horror aficionado and a lover of all things scary.
I would go that far. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I believe your playlist represents the new hotness in scary things. Yes.
Absolutely. So I've been dipping my toes into Outlast Trials, and normally I'm the person who is playing game preview, early access stuff day one. I'm the person who goes in super early, goes super hard, burns through everything there is to do. And then when the game actually comes out in 1.0, I'm like, I'm done. I've been there, done that. So I don't even get to experience these games finished because I need it now. I want it now. I want to experience it. So with Outlast Trials, I purposely said, no, abstain, Miles. You don't need to play early access. Wait for the 1.0 version. Do yourself a favor and just go in when it's ready, when it's prime time. And so I've jumped in with some buddies this week, and we have been playing Outlast Trials for the first time. I didn't even watch people stream it. I went in, I was going way out of my way to make sure that when I went into this game, I knew next to nothing. I knew it was a 4-player co-op game set in the Outlast universe, has some weird Red Scare Soviet stuff going on, but that was about it.
And I played it for 80 hours in early access. I beat the game. I cosplay as it. I turned my house into the set from it. But other than that, nothing.
Wait, so the reason you chose this course of action is because you had such high hopes. You were so certain this was going to be a game you would love. Is that right?
I'm just trying to be better because I do it with every single early access horror game. I do it.
All right.
And I've just noticed the last 10 times I've done it, I've literally never gone back to 1.0. I've played so much of it.
Before. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So this
proved to be a wise decision.
Yes. It's Outlast Trials is such a weird horror game. It's, there is nothing like it. And the easiest way I can describe it is if you were doing a really grisly, graphic, anti-sex escape room with your friends.
And there's Tuesday.
Hey, brother, am I right? So I know this, you know, I won't swear, but I will touch on, you know, some graphic material here just to kind of set the tone of what this game is. And I've been describing this game to my wife who hasn't played it. And she's asked me, what the hell are you playing? What is this game? This game sounds disgusting and depraved. Right. So there's one mission. So they're called trials in this. And you're basically trying to, you know, punish the children or destroy the sex toy. And these are all fake scenarios where they create these elaborate rooms in a warehouse that are designed to highlight sexual repression or government corruption and all these political messages and themes. But there's one where you're in a doll factory and you go through a series of rooms. You hit this switch. A gentleman comes out completely naked, strapped to this conveyor belt. And he's screaming. He's completely naked. You see everything and he's screaming.
Oh, it was DLC day. He was just celebrating DLC day, clearly, DLC day. As you do.
And so you don't
dangling while lying on a conveyor.
This game doesn't give you any moral options. There, you follow the mission. That's it. So you're going through and you're collecting oil and you're collecting plastic. And so you push this dude down the conveyor belt. You get him to this door. You load in the oil. You load in the plastic. And then you load in this naked man. And you are slowly turning this living man into a doll by adhering melted plastic to him. So he comes out of the other side, melting. His face is melted off. He's gurgling through his melted flesh. And you do this like 4 times until like the last room, he's barely hanging on, but he's still there. And he is a sex doll. He now has a weird sex harness like bolted to his body. And then you put him in the incinerator. And yay, you beat it. Congratulations, you did the mission.
Is he like a bad guy? Like, this is like a killer? You don't know.
These are all, to you, these are all random people. These are all completely random people. You don't get a backstory to these. You are just following orders. And all the while, psychopaths and serial killers are chasing you through these rooms, trying to stop you from doing this. But that's
sound
kind
like
of
the good guys in that situation.
Yeah, it is a very, very intense game. And it shows some visuals you will not find in any other game, for better or worse. So that's, even as a horror fan, and even as someone who's seen a lot of gore in movies and games, I was a little taken aback by some of the visuals and the missions in Outlast Trials.
A game soon to be seen on the Senate room floor, being debated by people who have no idea what
they're
talking
about. God
help
us if there's a group of four teens who get together and turn a grown man to a sex doll. We're never going to hear the end of it.
We're in trouble. So are you enjoying this experience?
Yes, I have about 12 hours in so far.
Okay, sure.
There's a really good skill tree. And one of my favorite things about the game is you're in this hub with a bunch of other players. You can decorate your room. You get to decorate your character. But in the main lobby, you could arm wrestle random players. And when people are arm wrestling, you can get on the side of the table and just spam right trigger and just pound the table. You can have two people arm wrestling and then four people gather on the table just slamming their fists. And then you can play full on matches of chess. There's a chess board.
Oh, sure.
And there's just, you can just sit there in the lobby of this graphic, horrific, disgusting game and just kick back and play chess. And there's a rank system for arm wrestling and chess. So you can rank up and like gain levels based on your skill in arm wrestling and chess. And then you can go in and do the most horrifying things you've ever seen.
It's just like Hannibal Lecter would himself. You have the nice Chianti. You have a little chess match, and
it's what would happen if we got an over the top remake in 2024. You know,
I don't know if this game is for me. Nothing you've described over the top. Nothing you've described so far has made me want to download it.
Except for the
chess, Jeff. You did mention that you and your son are getting into chess. And I think this chess might be the game that makes your son a chess fan for
if
life.
If this was the only way for us to play chess, then perhaps.
There's even a nice little poster on the wall that tells you all the different moves for all the pieces. So you can learn chess in Outlast Trials. And I think that's neat.
So the fun is where? The fun is in the being chased by the psychopath. So are the psychopaths other players, or are those NPC psychopaths?
So they are NPC. So this is not an asymmetrical game. It's a purely co-op game. So the fun is the tension. A lot of co-op games in the horror space are usually less scary just by nature of being co-op.
Right.
But this is one of the rare instances where you don't lose the horror, because you can throw bricks, you can throw bottles, you can stun enemies, but you don't really have a way to fight back for the most part. So the tension of scavenging, looking for supplies, trying to solve these puzzles, because it is an escape room. Some of the puzzles are pretty elaborate, and you have to try to think about the scenario while you're being chased. And that to me is where the game really shines, is that sense of tension and then being forced to work together. Because it's not, you can play it solo, but it's not. It doesn't seem enjoyable. It doesn't seem like an enjoyable solo experience.
Then you're really on a list. Mm-hmm. You're just playing this alone in your room.
So you
enter the room not knowing that you're creating the human sex doll.
All the missions are very vague. It'll just be punish the children, destroy the sex toy, eradicate the evidence. And then, you learn the evidence is actually human body parts that you're dissolving in acid. And
Christian, I'm told that you wishlisted this game.
Actually, just for the chess. Again, it's just for the
chess.
My youngest loves it. My youngest loves it. My oldest is a big arm wrestling fan. So it is family game night.
It's family game night.
I think it is kind of easy to make jokes about, as we are, but I am fascinated by the idea of the game where you're not a good person. I think media can tell that story, and I think video games can tell that story in interesting ways. Was it Manhunter? Was that the Rockstar game that got a bunch of stuff because you're not a good person in that?
Or, any Rockstar game.
often any Rockstar game. I mean, to some extent, Helldivers 2, and there's not much of a story there, but like, we played more of that this week while you were gone, Jeff. Mechs, woohoo! But like, the kind of running narrative and thought in Helldivers 2 is that you're doing this, you're destroying the evidence. If you go, it's like, burn, go blow up this research station. Well, why are we blowing this up? For democracy.
Don't ask
it's
questions.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. How many sex toys are we making in Helldivers 2? I think a lot. I don't know. But I am fascinated by this idea.
That's how the automaton started.
Probably, you know, what this game is doing. And I think being uncomfortable is part of it, especially in the horror genres of like, we're going to have you do bad things. And that's part of the art behind it. And in this kind of gross, engaging world, like not every puzzle game needs to be missed.
It's true. That's Outlast Trials. And it's what's on Miles's playlist. Christian Spicer, you and I got an early copy of Rise of the Ronin, which is a new PlayStation Studios release. We are able to talk a very specific portion of the game today. We can talk more at a later date. But we held this episode so we could talk a little preview discussion. Preview hands-on is really what we are talking now. We have the full version of the game, but our preview hands-on can cover what is, I think, maybe the first couple of hours. And I want to know what you think of Rise of the Ronin.
Yeah, so it is a Team Ninja game. PlayStation Studios published, but Team Ninja, the developer, Neo 2, Ninja Gaiden, you know, way back when. And even from these first hours that we can talk about, this game, I think, is going to live and die in its combat. Assuming what you start out with or what the game shows you early continues to pay off as you go. Like this game, not necessarily like Neo in terms of its combat, which is more Souls-like. I mean, there is that, but it is a combat-dense game. You know, there are characters and stances and weapons, and any enemy can kill you, but you're also taking on mobs of them because it's faster. It has kind of Sekiro vibes in that regard, where Sekiro was the faster Souls-like even than Bloodborne, and you're expected to do more against not an army, but three or four people attacking you all at the same time. So I feel like it has a lot of that. And early on, it shows you this idea that I think is fascinating of switching between characters. So you are in control of your character that you go into this character creator and make, and there's tons of options to, you know, pick how you want to look and then take that character into the game. But you are then with another character, and there are moments where you are playing and you can switch between them at any time, and when you're not playing, it's controlled by, you know, the computer, and engaging in combat and being helpful, not just standing there off to the side like, you got it, like they're engaging. But I found moments to be really cool in this style of game to then switch to that other character, that other protagonist, and now suddenly I'm behind this Souls-like boss, you know, not necessarily a Souls-like big monster, but like this difficult combat encounter that I'm in. But now I'm coming at it from behind, right? I've literally switched positions.
Yeah,
the intricacies that opens up.
The enemy somehow knows who the player character is all the time. They focus on who you're controlling at any given time. So you can sort of like ping pong back and forth so that it'll chase after the one that you're playing as. And then you switch around and it's like, ah, ha, ha, I am not left-handed. I'm behind you now. And and then it'll like be like, oh, I'm going to attack that one. And then you can, I was having fun with that too. Ping-ponging back and forth.
Yeah.
Another thing is that if you're like me and you're not particularly awesome at parries, you know, you can see an attack coming and switch to the other character right as the attack's coming. And then the computer can parry for you.
Pro tip right there.
Yeah. Yeah,
Jeff's actually never playing. He hasn't actually played any of Rise of the Ronin yet, but he switched between the characters to let the computer play.
I am leading the league in assists.
I think for me, it's hard even with these early previews to not compare this game to Ghost of Tsushima, which is a game that I absolutely loved in a different style of engaging combat, but also stances, weapons, being aware of the enemy you're coming up against, how you're going to, you know, counter what they're doing. And so I think it's hard. Go ahead. Sorry.
I don't mean to interrupt you. I think it's the natural game to compare it to, and in a lot of ways deserves that comparison. I think right off the top, though, I want to be clear to people. I think tonally, very different games. This is a much more pulpy, over the top. I found Ghost of Tsushima to be very attempting to be much more grounded and kind of realistic is not the right word. I mean, there's nothing realistic per se about Ghost of Tsushima, right? It's, you literally see the wind, but it's a much more, I think, based in reality kind of experience, and trying to honor the history of the culture, and not to say that this game is not, but it is very much more trying to convey a pulpy, big action movie experience that is much more akin to Ninja Gaiden, I think, than, you know, which is consistent with the pedigree of the developer, but it's much more consistent to that than, you know, I would say Ghost of Tsushima is really, as action-y as it is, it's really trying to aim for something closer to, I don't know, Last of Us. You know, it's more, it's like a grounded kind of realistic thing, but you can disagree with me if you do.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I'm not sure if I disagree, but I'm not sure. I think I'd want to play more of Rise of the Ronin, or talk about more of Rise of the Ronin. I think I understand what you're saying with Ghost of Tsushima and kind of how it presents its world. But I think Rise of the Ronin, even from these early parts, establishes a very interesting and real world of when Japan was closed off to the West and what that means to now have it be opened up. But yes, I agree that it does seem, silly is not quite the right word, but it seems odd to then have this Westerner, you know, pull out their katana and be dive rolling and zipping around all over the world as you're engaged in this very cinematic style samurai ninja fight. Like, that doesn't feel grounded into the world that they've then created. But I don't know if it's necessarily pulpy or just not hitting the mark. Like, that's what I struggle with. I think this game's combat is going to please a lot of people. Again, assuming it continues what they show in the beginning, and, you know, there's this, the skills and everything develop, and you're able to keep diving into the nuance of this combat system. But I don't think it's a particularly beautiful game. Again, I feel bad saying that. I don't think I'm a graphic snob necessarily, but when it's going for, I think it's a realistic setting, right? Like the world in which it lives and the art style that it is chasing is one based in realism. And as a PlayStation 5 game, you know, there are load times. There are things about this game that I went and re-downloaded Ghost of Tsushima to play it again, the PS5 upgrade version. I have a hard time not being like, I like that other one better. Even if maybe they're not doing the same thing, I think they're close enough that I'm really curious to see if the depth of the combat in Rise of the Ronin is enough to pull me through. Because this first part, I'm not sure.
I think the fun that it's offering is that dynamism of the pinging back and forth between the two characters. And there's something really cool about that. I think there's something genuinely cool about that. And, you know, we haven't even mentioned yet, you have a grappling hook where you can grapple around the environment in certain areas. Not anywhere. You have to have like a grappling anchor. But you can also use that in combat. You can pull people towards you. You can grab exploding barrels in the environment and toss them at people. It's cool. There's a lot of like cool options. You're getting new weapons. You start the game not just creating your character, but kind of creating a template for your character. I went with the Seducer, which I was very excited about. In this early section of the game, I found no one to seduce. I was very disappointed. I'm the seducer. It was like, oh, you're going to have a high charisma score. And it's like, okay, how is that high charisma score doing when I'm literally just fighting tons of people? There's no...
That I'm very curious to see where it goes, because there's a lot of stuff that you're setting up at the beginning that isn't paid off in the first couple hours. But I also kind of love this as a preview, right? Where they're not giving you a lot of times these previews are you're 4 hours into the game. Here's is what the game is going unlocked. To be.
Yeah. I agree. So maybe it really, you know, blooms like a flower. I think that would be cool. And I found myself liking it. I did not have the visual qualms that you have. I thought the game was pretty attractive. I mean, if you had told me it was a PS4 game, I would believe you, but I do think it's, I think it's attractive game. I had no problem with it. I mean, there are some moments where I was like, which direction am I supposed to go? You know, there's some clarity things with that. The menus are a little clunky, but I don't know. I think I was having a little more fun with it than you. Again, very early on in the game, who knows, you know, what's to come. It may disappoint or thrill in varying degrees, but I'm encouraged. I did not love Ghost of Tsushima as much as you did. Folks that listen to the show will note. So maybe I don't have as much of that shadow looming over this game as you do.
Which I do recognize is perhaps an unfair comparison, because I think because there are so few games set in this era that it perhaps unfairly, it's like Sekiro. I think was Sekiro my first Souls game that I think it was. I think I streamed it. It was like my first From game that I really dove into. So that has a special place in my heart. And then Ghost of Tsushima, I loved. That is a special place in my heart. And now it's like, now there's another one. How much room does my do I have in my heart?
My heart can only handle so much.
It can only handle so much. Which I feel like is perhaps an unfair comparison.
His
but
heart grew three sizes that day.
Maybe on the combat it will. Maybe it will.
Yeah, we'll talk more about this game when we can. But I don't know. I think I'm a little more encouraged by the early bits than you. But yeah, I mean, it is a very combat heavy game. And, you know, in the character creation, it really led me to believe, oh, maybe this game is going to let me like talk my way out of fights and, you know, I mean, the high charisma. And it's like, you're high charisma. That means you should use the spear weapon. And I was like,
huh?
How does that?
Hey, okay. It's because you make good points.
I mean, all the weapons have points, but okay. Yeah. And then you have these starting weapons. They make such a big deal about it. And then it's like literally at the very beginning, it's like, hey, you found a new cool saber. It's +4 to that dumb old spear that you had. It's like, but all my charisma's in that spear. It's like, I guess I'm just using whatever awesome weapon I find next. It doesn't have anything to do with what I'm specialized in. I don't know. It has some mixed messaging at the beginning, but I don't know. I think it has some promise. I'm more encouraged by it. I think it's an interesting, I hope the traversal gets more fun. There's a lot of like, you can leap up onto this thing and then you're in the hold of the ship at the very beginning. And it's like, there's boxes that I could clearly leap onto and it won't let me, you know, that was a little frustrating too. Anyway,
Team Ninja has made they've made some of my favorite action games of all time. And if anyone knows combat, I feel like they still do. And that's why I think the character creator, what they show you early on with switching between people and the depth seems like it's there. I have a feeling that, you know, when we can talk about after I've played the full game, I'll be like, yeah, okay, top five. I feel like it's pedigree, what they show you just in the character creator. And even that you mentioned like charisma, spear, but as you go through just those basic, you don't have to pick one of them. You can tinker all your own stuff,
right.
But just on those basic like starter things, the weapon variety you see there, it's like, oh, you want dual swords and a pistol, which one is cool because you don't usually have that combination. That like actually you want a musket and a this. Like I feel like that complexity is going to play out, and that's super exciting.
Yeah, I'm encouraged by Rise of the Ronin. I also, you know, I feel like the original Xbox Ninja Gaiden game is does not get the credit it deserves for being really ahead of its time, because I feel like all the justifiable plaudits that Souls games get for changing the industry, I think they owe a big debt of gratitude to Ninja Gaiden. I think that I don't know if you get to Dark Souls or Demon Souls or whatever the first one was without the first Ninja, that reboot of the Ninja Gaiden franchise, which was kind of doing it before the Souls games were,
and just a lot faster, but it was punishing.
Oh. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, those games were great.
What else is on your playlist, Christian?
Well, hopefully proving the point that I just don't need cutting edge graphics for everything. New Star GP. I did not know about this game. Oh, you mentioned we got codes for Rise of the Ronin. I got a code for this game. I did not know this game was coming out. It was not on my radar. I saw an email that it was out, and I was like, well, I'm always going to click the YouTube link to see what the game is. Like, I've never heard of this game. I like racing games. What is this game? Holy crap. I love New Star GP. It is what if virtual racing was made today with virtual racing graphics, but today's virtual racing graphics. So it still is very Virtua, you know, like that old school, what you think of, Jeff, we talked about this, what people think of for Virtua Fighter, even though, yeah, Virtua Fighter has gotten much more realistic looking over the years, but kind of that intentionally polygonal, not cell shaded, but like everything has a flat color to it. Basic old Sega arcade driving game visual appeal. And it is doing that, but I got a code on PC, so I played on PC and on Steam Deck. It is a rock solid 60 frames per second on my Steam Deck. It's incredible on my PC, on my big monitor, just absolutely stunning. You have the different camera angles and you can go in and all of that stuff. And then really awesome and fun fundamental racing dynamics, where it is, again, more akin to virtual racing, more arcadey on that side of things, where you're not, you know, as I still have my wheel set up behind me, it's not Gran Turismo 7. I'm not trying to pilot these F1 cars in a realistic manner around these, you know, hairpin turns where I need to slow down to 20 miles an hour. Like, yes, you hit the brake, but also you are keeping this arcade momentum going through. But as a game made today, I feel like it's bringing in just enough of the, I don't want to even use the word sim because it is not that, but it makes it engaging for today's player. Whereas virtual racing, at the end of the day, all you're doing is time attacking yourself. You know, you have the checkpoint races. You can try to get your own score, but that's it. It's an arcade game.
And New Star GP. Why are you time attacking yourself?
Because in the house we organize, outside the house we time attack. Okay. New Star GP brings in fun management style things that a lot of more sim-oriented racing games have, but again, in an arcadey approach. So afterwards, you can upgrade your car because you've unlocked currency to increase your downforce, but you're not looking at different dampeners to be like, oh, what is going to do this? Or is this front nose going to, how is this going to, I got to reduce my drag in order to get this because this is a twisty turn. I got to do that. It's like, do you want to go faster? Put money into faster. You know, want to have better handling? Put money into handling. I'm simplifying a little bit, but it very much is an arcadey approach to that style of upgrading your vehicle, getting better. But at the same time, it does, you will need to take pit stops as you are doing longer races. And the weather will change. It will become rainy. So if you pit, you can put on wet weather tires or hard tires for a different scenario. And you do that itself as a little mini game where you go into the pit. You have to, you know, the little radial comes up and you select which tires you want. And then you hold down, I think it's right trigger to put more gas in. And it's in real time. You see it filling up. So you can sit there and think like, how long am I going to pit? Can I get by with just a quarter of a tank of gas? Because I only have two laps left. And have I been keeping track? And then you zip back out into the race. And so it's just enough of that stuff to be really engaging as a single player campaign. After your race, you have your pit crew that you're kind of doing a slight social relationship management with, where it's like, oh, Miles is on your comms team and he's angry spend 20 credits to make Miles happy, and you click like, yeah, I'll do that. And then like, now Miles is happy.
Pay him
and
off to be less happy or more
happy?
Yeah,
you give him 20 credits to make him happy, and now he's going to give you this advice for the next track, or like, Jeff is really upset that you blamed your loss on the engineers, because like, you'll lose a race, or I've lost a race, and they'll be like, why did you lose that race? Was it engineering or was it pit crew? And you have to pick one. And I'm like, engineering? And like, well, engineering's mad at you now.
Kicked off engineering. Give them $20.
And then they'll, you know, and then they're not going to give you these upgrades. It is really cool. And the way it encourages you to, as you go through the campaign, if you will, like I'll go to a new track, you'll just do practices and you do the classic gate check trial. Then you do an elimination race and then you have a GP that you can only do once per season, but you can go back and get a, if you best a PR on a past race, you can get more currency that way. So it really has this stickiness that I think makes it engaging as a single player racer, but in this beautiful, simple wrapper that I think is immediately accessible to kids and also people that maybe have moved away from the complexity of what even WRC and some of the rally games became, where it's just like, so much management comes into it, or Gran Turismo, where you spend half of it drinking coffee, learning about, you know, the rotary engine of the RX-7 and why it's important. I love it. New Star GP. I did not know it was coming out. I ended up getting a code the day it came out, and it has absolutely, absolutely blown me away. It is beautiful. And I think there are a lot of folks who have maybe not paid attention to racing games that are going to find a lot to love with it. I love it. It's great.
Very cool. That's New Star GP, and it is on Christian's playlist.
I made Jeff mad. I'm sorry, Jeff. Here's $20.
I'm not mad anymore.
Yay!
I checked out a game that was actually last week's parting gift from a listener. We got a listener who sent in a recommendation for Rough Ganor, which I hope I'm pronouncing correctly. This is based on, I believe, a Brazilian series of novels, I want to say. It's an existing, I think there's a podcast and everything. It's like an existing fantasy world. This is, you know, my jam. It's a card-based, turn-based action, not action, turn-based, you know, strategy game. But I think the coolest thing about Rough Ganor is that it also has a really strong story. As I said, based on a series of narrative works that are pre-existing, it's set in a really interesting fantasy world. There's magic and miracles and you know, all kinds of really cool monsters and stuff, but not in the mold, not in the Tolkien mold, not in the sort of traditional fantasy mold. It really carves out its own identity, which I always enjoy. And you are, you know, as far as its gameplay mechanics, it's very standard. You've got a deck of cards. You have multiple people potentially on your team that are, when you get into combat, each of them has cards that will do, you know, add a block number to your stats or attack in a certain number or buff or debuff yourself or the enemies. It's not reinventing the wheel as far as card game mechanics, card fighting game mechanics. But it does it all very solidly. I mean, it's a solid entry into that. The art is really lovely. It's all painterly, looks very hand painted. The characters are big. When they get into these dialogue moments, they have big portraits that come up. The backgrounds are really beautiful. It's a lovely looking game. But then when you're not fighting, there are a number of other things that happen. You can go to these nodes around the map that will give you just story encounters or challenges of various types. Again, stuff you'll see in other types of games, but I thought it's
like
done
punishing
particularly
the boy,
well.
What's hiding that? The evidence, like the stuff you see in regular games.
Yeah,
you know?
Everyday games.
Melting humans, just
exactly.
regular things.
Exactly.
See.
Making the sex doll go into the incinerator.
Yeah.
But this one time you do it with cards. Now,
that's a fun twist.
That's a fun twist. You'll do these challenges where it'll say, you know, you have various options, and it's like, well, if you want to try to do this option to do it successfully, you'll draw five cards from your deck And if three of them have certain values on them, or if, you know, if three of them are defense type cards, then you'll pass. So you know the constitution of the deck. You've been building it. You've been adding cards to it. You've been upgrading cards, removing cards from it in a very standard, you know, deck building, turn-based game like this. So you know the constitution of your deck, and you can be, and you can look at your deck at any time, and you can go, oh, I think it's pretty good chance that I'll be able to win this, or, you know, succeed on that challenge. So there's, I thought that was a kind of a cool way to resolve those types of challenges. There's, games do that kind of stuff and resolve them in a number of different ways. I thought that was a clever one. But more than that, it's the writing inside those challenges and the character interactions and the twists and turns of the story. I thought for a game like this, you don't usually see such strong storytelling. It's rare for these games to have that kind of strong storytelling because they're mostly mechanical exercises, right? You know, a Slay the Spire isn't trying to tell you a story about the spire. It's just, you know, you're just, how far up did you get this time? And this
did
game,
you slay, I think, it, or did you not slay,
yeah,
it?
Exactly. Is it slayed?
Nope. Get back to it.
Yeah, keep going. You haven't slayed it yet. And in this game, I think they have loftier ambitions. It really is about these characters, about making interesting decisions, about how they do things. And it's such a pretty game. I really like Rough Ganor, and I wish the pure card mechanics had something a little more interesting. There is this element where you're acquiring, I can't even remember what it is. I think it's called Faith. I could be wrong about that, but you're acquiring a power up as you play certain cards that let you unleash these miracles that are super powered attacks or abilities. And it's fun because sometimes you'll play a card, not because it's the best card for that moment, but because you're charging up your super attack basically. And so that's kind of fun, but again, not something I haven't seen in other games. It really isn't trying to reinvent the wheel that way. It's just a really solid entry into this genre doing, I think, really strong story-based wrapper around that mechanic. And I'm into it. Rough Ganor. I really appreciate the recommendation. I didn't know about this game. It came out mid to late February. I bought it for $20 on Steam, played it a lot as I was traveling this week on my Steam Deck. The text is a little small for the Steam Deck. I feel like they could have accounted for that. The text of the cards is a little small, but plays pretty well on Steam Deck. And I think Rough Ganor is easy recommend from me at $20. All right, that's it for our playlist, and that's it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Miles Dompierre, always awesome to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. It's been a blast. Always appreciate you guys. Glad we had some fun stuff to talk about this week. But yeah, appreciate you having me on.
Wonderful. How can folks keep up with you and all the cool stuff that you do online?
You can follow me at Miles Dompierre on pretty much everything. You know, I used to say that Twitter was my favorite platform, and I'm still on there more than I should be. And you can keep up to date with some of the stuff we're working on if you go to illphonic.com. And if you're into horror, Killer Clowns from Outer Space, the game, is coming out in June, which I'm excited about. I was stoked about that game before I had any inkling I was going to work at Illphonic, or before I had any inkling that Illphonic was going to be involved with the project. So the stars have kind of aligned that I get to work on this game. So really excited about that.
That's awesome. Yeah. It looks really fun. I mean, just the trailers that we've seen so far look really great. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Well, like I said, I write a newsletter, christianspicer.substack.com, the bi-weekly, every other week. Last one was Friday. Folks can still find it there, but it is about the ideal remake. We live in a world now where we have so many different types of what a remake is or can be. And I think that's fascinating. And I really do think it's what Square Enix is doing with Final Fantasy VII has stuck in my head for what a remake can, or dare I say, should be in terms of a re-examination or adaptation of something. And to see them do it with something so beloved, you know, my hat's off to them and the team for doing that. What a creative risk to do something so big and so bold with something that is arguably the best RPG of all time, and to really re-examine it. So that's what this last newsletter was about. Folks can find that. Again, it's christianspicer.substack.com. And then this show is on Threads and Instagram as DLC Hype Train. And we put up video versions, video segments on YouTube at DLC Pod. So if people want to see, was I cosplaying as a melted wax human being while Miles was talking about the Outlast trials this week? I don't know. Maybe head over to YouTube and see if that segment's up of me wearing my been melted twice
just so cosplay. It's different than his usual been melted only once costume that he always
Thank
wears.
You. The Southern California sun is not easy on the skin, my friend.
That's right. Yeah. No kidding. You can follow me on socials. I'm at Jeff Cannata. Have other shows that I also do, including the Filmcast, talking about movies and TV shows. I do We Have Concerns, which is a comedy science show. And the film, The Fan Controlled Show, which is a sports show on the Fan Controlled Sports and Entertainment Network. Anywhere you get podcasts, you can check those out. And again, we love hearing from you at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion.
Do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Yes. Shogun has been my kind of TV drama obsession the last few weeks. It snuck up on me. I went to the theaters a few weeks ago and watched Lisa Frankenstein. And oddly enough, that is where I even heard of Shogun. There was a trailer in the theaters for Shogun. And I was like, oh, damn, this looks pretty epic. I'm down to give this a shot. I like a good period drama. There are a dime a dozen these days. There's so many. But as a huge Game of Thrones fan, you want something that scratches that itch in that vein. Yeah. And I think Shogun's been the first one in a long time that does that. It's got big moments, incredible, huge environments, and the political intrigue. It's got great, really strong characters, really strong acting. It, in terms of television, it's really the total package. You do have to read. There are subtitles, and I know for some people that's what it may be a deal breaker. But I mean, in this case, that hasn't been a worry at all because the writing is so powerful. And I think there's been 3 episodes out, maybe 4. But it's the show I'm looking forward to every single week right now because it's got me. It's the production value is huge. It is clearly and obviously a high budget show, and you feel it in every single scene. So I don't know if you guys have been watching that, but Shogun is so damn good.
If you're thinking of playing Rise of the Ronin, it's good companion viewing. Gotta say, good companion, gonna get you in the mood to play Rise of the Ronin. That Shogun show, it's pretty impressive. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
Surprise, pop punk. Bayside has a new album coming out April 5th. There Are Worse Things Than Being Alive is the name of the album. There's a whole bunch of, I don't even know if they're called singles anymore, a whole bunch of songs from the album are already out on streaming services to listen to. I think there are a few bands that are able to pull off what Bayside pulls off in terms of the more hardcore guitar or instrumental backing with very melodic vocals. Bayside are the best at some of what they do, and the new songs from their new album, There Are Worse Things Than Being Alive, are incredible. And so, folks, I would encourage them to check that out. I think the last album was maybe an acoustic album they did of some of their other songs, but this is classic Bayside back again. It's really, really good.
My parting gift is also musical in a way. We got the kids, Santa got for the kids. A karaoke machine.
It's March.
This, yeah, I know. I'm about to tell a story about this, so I'm giving you the backstory now. That
I thought you did it on DLC Day. I didn't know you did it for Christmas. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, yeah, it's our DLC Day. No, we gave our kids a karaoke machine, a Bluetooth karaoke machine that I think it was like $70, and you can get really into the weeds in this place. I mean, there was like $300, $400, $500, $600, $800 ones. it was, it's, you know, there's a wide variety. We stayed, relatively manageable. It's a box. I don't know about, about a foot and a half tall. It's not huge. But it lights up to the music. And, my wife got like a $50 little, disco type light rig that you can, that listens to the ambient noise around you and does lights to the thing. Anyway, we've been doing karaoke nights at the house just with the kids. And it's fun. Like the tech has gone a long way since I was, the last time I tuned into karaoke machines that you could buy at home, they needed like special CDs that, you know, you had the lyrics on them. Everything now is just, you just go to YouTube and you just go to YouTube and there it's on YouTube and you just look at it and it's Bluetooth and it goes to the thing and you've got microphones and now you're in. Anyway, very simple, very cool. And it means you could do any song you want, including like the goofy random songs that my kids love. Anyway, fast forward to this weekend where we went, flew to Chicago and went and visited my sister-in-law and her kids, and my wife got them one as a present because it was a birthday, and it was a huge hit. We had so much fun. Put on the little light, turn the lights off in the kitchen, turn the light on. The kids were singing, the adults were singing. It was so much fun that I just thought I had to recommend folks try it. If you haven't done karaoke in a long time, or if you've never done karaoke in your own home, it's a whole different thing than going to a bar or where there's strangers watching. But you can have it, get the kids a microphone, find out the thing that they know all the lyrics to, and you'll be shocked. My kids know some songs, I'll tell you what. Bluetooth karaoke machine. They're not super expensive and they're lots of fun. All right. We got a listener suggested parting gift. This comes to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Sasha. Sasha writes, "Sure, I like video games and I sure enjoy games made out of cardboard too. But my real passion is pinball. Big, real, analog pinball. I play leagues and tournaments and do okay sometimes. So I was in a game store and I bought this game in a moment of, well, this is coming with me. It's called Star Trek Super Skill Pinball, put out by WizKids. It's a dice game in which you put a little pinball marker on the board and roll dice to try and hit targets on the play field. Targets show a dice side. So if there's a 5 and you roll a 5, you cross it out. Ball starts at the top and you fill out targets with a dry erase marker. Run out of targets, and the ball is moved to the middle part of the play field. Then again, down to the flippers. And you push your luck until you have no targets left and drain your ball. It's got a little bit of what if Yahtzee had a pinball mod kind of feel. There are 4 different tables, and they get harder and are Star Trek. So a Borg table and a Tribbles table and a Lower Decks and then some other one. There's a video game theme set available too and some others. I just got the one they had there. Try it. It's only $20 to $25, so not a heavy investment. Keep it up, Sasha." Well, I got news for you, Sasha. I am also a big fan of Super Skill Pinball. In fact, friend of mine, friend of the show, Jeff Engelstein, is the designer of Super Skill Pinball. Jeff Engelstein's been a guest on our show. Awesome dude, friend of mine. I have Super Skill Pinball in the other room. There are a lot of different decks. It's what they call in board games a roll and write game. It is a brilliant design by Mr. Engelstein. And I can heartily agree with your recommendation for people to try it out. It's cool that they kept the price point low. And there's a bunch of different ones, different sets. There's the Star Trek one. There are others that are themed. And they're all really fun. You can play it solo. You can play it with people. It's fun. So check out Super Skill Pinball from WizKids, Sasha's parting gift. If you have a parting gift you'd like to share on our show, we'd love to hear from you. DLCfeedback@gmail.com is where you send those. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Miles Dompierre and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those awesome bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can get swag for the show, merchandise, mugs like Christian's holding up, t-shirts, hats, all kinds of cool stuff over at store.dlcpod.com. Our biggest thanks belong to our patrons. They make this show possible single-handedly. Thank you, patrons, for supporting us. Our top-tier patrons, our Hype Train patrons, become video games. That's right. It's time at the end of the show, as we like to do, to talk about games that deserve another mention. Nobody else is mentioning these games, Christian. Nobody else is talking about the Michael Stadler game except us here on DLC.
Welcome to the Partner Showcase on DLC. We're going to be talking about some great games today, like some action stalwarts you might know and love.
Stadler. Oh, talk about an action game. Stadler was, it was a game where I personally tried to beat the leaderboard every single time I played it. I was obsessed with the numbers, obsessed with improving my stats. In fact, I remember at the time we called ourselves Stadler Statlers.
I think it was a game that really straddled that line between being an action game and kind of a score chaser. You know, it really straddled between the two, and which is why we called ourselves Staddle Staddlers, because we would, you know, perfectly balance over those two.
Not me. I was all about the stats. I was all about a faster run, higher score, destroying more alien clone pods. Remember the clone pods?
See, I would strategize which version of the Staddler I wanted to be on my run. Uh-huh. So I put a lot of thought into it before diving back in each time.
That was a great game. The weapons were you could double wield. Remember, you could double wield, so you were kind of straddling two guns at the same time as well.
I do remember that. I also really liked how you controlled the dual wielding. You know, at the time, because the dual analog wasn't common back then, right? Like, I forget, I think it was PlayStation didn't even ship with the dual analog stick. You had to buy that later. So it was also straddling this world.
we're so predictable.
The best part is each time we do it, we tell a longer backstory before we get to the pun. So it makes it more endearing.
More endearing is one way to do it. That was a great game. Another great game that comes to mind is the Mike Lombardo game. Remember the
Battle of the Mikes? Lombardo? I do. I remember Lombardo.
It was one of my favorite way we make games of all time. The Lombardo's Tale. There's a whole series of Lombardo's Tales where you're playing a wandering Lombard. And you had these powerful magical songs, the Lombardo's Tales.
I have something that I need to admit. As we talked about Rise of the Ronin, and you know, we were allowed to talk about the preview part of it, and that embargo's up, which is why this episode came out later than usual. But Mike Lombardo was the first time I accidentally broke an embargo.
Oh, no, you broke the Lombardo embargo?
I did. I broke the embargo Lombardo, and it was super embarrassing because it was in print. I wrote for a print magazine, and that came out a month early, and they couldn't take it off the newsstand because no editor checked to see if I committed the cardinal sin of breaking Lombardo embargo.
I thought the only guy to have broken that embargo was the old announcer on Saturday Night Live. I thought Don Pardo was the only one that broke the Lombardo embargo.
Well, I wish that was the case, but there was literally somebody who walked around a town singing the tale of the Lombardo embargo being broken, and it was a Lombardo's Tale. I felt
Don Pardo? By it.
Live from this village, this guy broke the embargo. It was really, It was really, really sad.
I love that. I love that game. It was weird. There was only a single class you could play, and it was the Lombards. But they were. It was a good class, you know. It was a good.
I mean,
class.
You could have read my review early. You knew I loved it.
Yeah, yeah. I knew you loved it. In fact, that's why I played it, because Christian broke the Lombardo embargo. Anyway, if you'd like to have your name turned into a game, we're the guys to do it poorly. And the best way to do that is by becoming a patron at patreon.com/DLCpod. Hype train level, you become immortalized in the best possible way. Thanks for your support, Mike Lombardo and Michael Stadler. Your support is greatly appreciated. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.